Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
What is the Bible? Who wrote the Bible?
The church will continue to be even more irrelevant when it quotes letters from 2,000 years ago.
Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so, is where our trouble began.
This sounds to me like the voice of someone who really has an appalling ignorance of what the Bible says about itself and what Jesus said about it.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Have you ever heard of stay-at-home dads? This is Wretched Radio. No, I'm not describing our current trend where sometimes roles are swapped in our current 21st century setting. I'm talking about historically. Throughout, let's just leave it with American history, were women the ones to stay home and be the one who is predominantly responsible for the rearing of children? And the answer to that question is found in a book by Nancy Piercy called Total Truth, continuing our history lessons so that we can be good Christian historians, not so that we can respond to history and go into another ditch, but so that we can learn from it and understand how it is that we have arrived where we are today. If you recall, courtesy of the Great Awakenings, concerned about the new birth of an individual as opposed to more of the institutionalized, reasonable faith of the Anglican Communion, which is the Episcopalian expression in the United States. The mainline Protestant denominations taught, you're just taught into the kingdom. Throughout, you get catechized, you go to church, you go to meetings, you participate in the life of church, and almost via osmosis, you become intellectualized into the kingdom. It's a reasonable faith. The revivalists said no. And in jettisoning mainline Protestantism, being rightly concerned about their approach to soteriology, they created some problems. And the problems were an individualized faith that was emotions-based, which meant that the revivals of the First Great Awakening and the Second Great Awakening were aimed squarely at women. Inside of this book, Nancy Piercy wrote, there's a picture of a revival meeting. And if you look at the crowds, the first like 10 rows, it's all women. Why? Because revivalist preaching, it attracted women because it was very emotive. They were more drawn to that than the fellas. And so it was that churches became increasingly populated by women, which is why today we see more women in churches than men. The trend has continued because so much of evangelical Christianity, which is the dominant Christian force in America, I believe, is so emotive, so emotions-based, so aimed at women with soft sensibilities, no sharply cut distinctives, no sharp edges. All designed to be tender and thoughtful and encouraging and oh so helpful and ultimately anti-intellectual. But now, let's jump into societal history. The Great Awakenings have gone on. We're now going to enter into an event that transpired over decades that has defined how your home functions, that has defined how it is that husband and wife go about the business of providing for and nurturing a family. It was different before the Industrial Revolution. What did the Industrial Revolution cause? Let's dive in to history, shall we? Historically speaking, a key turning point in America, especially when it comes to household dynamics, was the Industrial Revolution. Let's paint a picture of life before that event, which started about 1780. In the colonial period, families lived much the way they live for millennia in traditional societies. The vast majority of people lived on farms or in peasant villages. Productive work was done in the home or its outbuildings. Work was done not by lone individuals, but by families or households. A household was a relatively autonomous economic unit, often including members of the extended family, apprentices, servants, hired hands. So stores and offices and workshops were located in the front room with living quarters either upstairs or in the rear. This meant the boundary between house and world was highly permeable. Have you ever been to Ireland? Or even in Germany, you will see this, where there is a shop up front, but the house is above or behind the store. I was just talking to Ludi Creech, a buddy of mine who has now started a church in Ireland. He's in town doing a tour of the States, and he was talking about the shops in smaller towns that have the family right inside of them, right behind the store where you pick up your goods, because they don't do it. It's not like Target or Walmart in these towns in Ireland. Every shop has a function, and it can be run by a family which shares the space of their business with work and with home. And that was the way that it was before the Industrial Revolution, which means guess who was home all the time? Dear old dad. And dear old dad is the one who was assigned the responsibility of the spiritual upbringing of the children. As we are going to see, the Industrial Revolution, it done changed that. What did the colonial integration of work and life mean for family? For relationships, it meant that husband and wife worked side by side on a daily basis, sharing in the same economic enterprise. For a colonial woman, one historian writes, quote, marriage meant to become a co-worker beside a husband, learning new skills in butchering, silversmith work, printing, upholstering, whatever special skills the husband's work required. As you hear about the dynamic of families in industry, in business, in keeping the family functioning and fed, think Proverbs 31 for a moment. Isn't it true that even those of us who are actual complementarians and not soft complementarians, which means you're actually an egalitarian, for those of us who actually hold a more biblical conservative line, we wrestle with Proverbs 31. Well, she did seem to be working outside of the home. Shouldn't she be home with the kids? I guess maybe she could, you know, do something on the internet, or maybe sell a knick-knack or a paddywhack here, maybe her pies. And we wrestle with it, don't we? It wasn't a wrestling match historically, because men and women worked with the kids, which meant dad didn't go away, leaving mom to be the stay-at-home mom. He was a stay-at-home dad. She was a stay-at-home mom. It was a stay-at-home family and a stay-at-home business. That is what life was like before the Industrial Revolution. Women worked. Also responsible for a host of household tasks requiring a wide range of skills, spinning wool and cotton. Proverbs 31, anybody? Weaving it into cloth, sewing the family's clothes, gardening and preserving food, preparing meals without pre-processed ingredients, making soap, buttons, candles, medicines. Many of the goods used in colonial society were manufactured by women, because women were working and dads were staying at home, not with the terms we understand today. It was both of them. And this helps me to grasp, okay, I see how Proverbs 31 can function so simply when it is a family unit that is responsible for the survival of the family unit. When we get broken up, dads go marching off to work, moms stay at home. What happens? Dads become individualistic. We are to be dog-eat-dog. In the meantime, women, and we're going to see this throughout history, were to be the civilizers, and they stay at home with the kids to do a lot of tasks that can be very mundane and can feel very unfulfilling. Prior to the Industrial Revolution, that wasn't an issue. Women were working, interacting, selling, buying, dealing with customers, while raising the kids simultaneously, because they had to be working in the business too. This all took place in the home, which meant that mothers were able to combine economically productive work with raising children. It also meant fathers were much more involved in raising children than they are today. In the colonial period, now this is pre-Industrial Revolution, the husband and father was regarded as the head of the household. And headship had a highly specific definition. It was defined as a divinely sanctioned office that conferred a duty to represent not his own individual interests, but those of the entire household. So everything he did was not for self. It was for us. There was a good for individuals, but there was also a good for the whole. Husbands and fathers were not driven by personal ambition or self-interest, but to take responsibility for the common good of the entire household for the sake of the common good of the community. Why? Because if we don't, we're not acting like good neighbors, and we could all starve to death. That changed with the Industrial Revolution. A man was expected to rank duty above personal ambition prior to it. To use a common phrase of the time, he was to fulfill himself through public usefulness more than economic success. And so fathers, like mothers, enjoyed the integration of work and childbearing responsibilities. With production centered on the family hearth, fathers were, quote, a visible presence year after year, day after day, as they trained their children to work alongside them. Being a father was not a separate activity to come home to after a day of work. Rather, it was an integral part of a man's daily life. And sermons about parenting were aimed at papas, not mamas. And we will see how that ultimately was shattered courtesy of the Industrial Revolution. Next on Wretched Radio.
Hey, it's another day, and it's another Wretched Radio. Hey, thank you for being here today. Listen, did you know that the third leading cause of death among millennials is suicide? That's right, it's true. Millennials are struggling. They're anxious, they're depressed, they're suicidal, and ultimately, they're lost, which is why Road Trip to Truth was created. Millennial John Fabares takes to the road to help tackle some of the issues millennials are struggling with today. Why is there evil in the world? Is Jesus really God? What are the supposed errors in the Bible? And many other questions are asked and answered on Road Trip to Truth. So don't miss out. Get your copy of Season 1 of Road Trip to Truth right now. It's just one more reason to support Wretched. Visit wretched.org/donate to support Wretched, or text the word Wretched to the number 44321. Road Trip to Truth, available right now at roadtriptotruth.org. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Despite what all of the headlines say, there is some very good news happening around the globe. Jesus is still fulfilling his promise to build his church. Nothing is going to stop it. And right now in Eastern Europe, he is doing just that through the Tomorrow Clubs. Kids clubs all throughout very poor Eastern European countries. And thanks to you, wretched person, more and more clubs are being sponsored, more and more kids are being saved, and more churches are being strengthened. Paul Marty from the Tomorrow Clubs.
Every time we visit a Tomorrow Club and talk to kids and leaders, we are blown away by the gospel's power to change lives. And the Wretched audience has been such a big part of making that possible.
Would you please consider sponsoring your very own Tomorrow Club? $30 a month. 30 Little Disciples. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Like a lot of believers, you may be wondering how you can incorporate heartfelt worship into your private devotion times. Well, I want to introduce you to the newest resource available in the Wretched Store. It's called Face to Face, Praying the Scriptures for Intimate Worship, and it's by Dr. Kenneth Boa. Face to Face is perfect for anybody who wants to get more personal and more intimate in their private times with the Lord. And what better way to do that than actually praying God's Word back to Him? Face to Face will walk you through an accurate and biblical and intimate approach to doing just that. With prayers like, "Let me hear your unfailing love in the morning, for I have put my trust in you. Show me the way I should walk, for to you I lift up my soul." Prayers like these will bring richness to your devotion times by connecting God's Word to your personal prayer time, and you'll learn to approach both in a new and meaningful way. Visit wretched.org/face to pick up your copy right now. wretched.org/face.
Books of the Bible. God told Hosea the prophet to marry a prostitute to illustrate Israel's unfaithfulness to God and God's faithful love for Israel. When Hosea's wife returned to prostitution and was enslaved, he bought her back and loved her. When you are mistreated and abandoned, remember that is how you treated God. But if you turn to God, He will forgive you.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
We just assume these are the way things ought to be. Perhaps we would do well to study history. This is Wretched Radio. How does American society, Western civilization function? Men go off to work. They come home where mom is waiting for them with the kids, having taken care of them all day. But isn't that definition radically being rewritten? Because now even moms go marching off to work, leaving children in the care of people that they trust with the nurturing of their children. How did we get here? Because this is not the way that it always was. And I will tell you up front, am I suggesting that somehow you go and build a commune in Montana to set up front of house businesses and then live in the back so that dad and mom can be home together? Is that what I'm after? The answer is yeah. No, sorry, that was the wrong. No, we'd like to, but I think that that is not only unreasonable, but I don't think it's biblical. I think that you and I are called to live in the culture that we're in, to not be cloistered, to not be sheltered, to not start our own thing, our own little underground economy as a countercultural revolution so that we can get back to families being units as opposed to being so individualistic. I just don't think that that's what we're called to. We're to live where we're at, deal with what we've got, and be as biblical as we possibly can. Understanding our history might just help us to do that. During the colonial times and every millennia prior, family units functioned together. Dad was a stay-at-home dad while working. Mom was a worker while staying at home. They both worked. Isn't that Proverbs 31? Doesn't that just help you interpret it better? Oh, of course the woman was working because dad was home too. And he was the one primarily responsible for the raising of kids. Sermons during colonial days were aimed at dads. Get this right, spiritual head. But an event took place starting in 1780. It really went all the way through the 1800s. You could even argue into the 20th century. But historians would typically say 1780 to 1830. That is when our culture was literally shattered. It is the Industrial Revolution, making factories, industries where men would go to work, not just wake up, jump out of bed and be at work. No, they went off to work. And this really played into another cultural trend that was taking place in America, which was American individualism. Nancy Piercy, in Total Truth, writes, "The new workplace fostered an economic philosophy of atomistic individualism." And we see that today, don't we? What are you supposed to be doing as a man in the workplace? Climbing the ladder. Whatever, whether it's corporate, whether it's industrial, makes no difference. Make more, get more. That was different. Men had little choice but to follow their work out of households and fields and into factories and offices. As a result, their physical presence around the household dropped sharply. It became difficult for them to continue acting as the primary parent. Fathers simply no longer spent enough time with their children to educate them, enforce regular discipline, or train them in adult skills and trades. Wow. It was different before the Industrial Revolution. As a result, the most striking feature of child-rearing manuals of the mid-19th century is the disappearance of references to fathers. For the first time, we find sermons and pamphlets on the topics of child rearing addressed exclusively to mothers rather than to fathers or even both parents. Why? Because women were now left at home with the kids. Dad had to go put food on the table. And the impact continued. The impact on women was, if anything, more dramatic than what it was on men. After the Industrial Revolution, the home eventually ceased being the locus of production and became a locus of consumption. Household industries, with their range of mutual service replaced by factories, waged labor. Instead of developing a host of varied skills like spinning or weaving and sewing and knitting, preserving, etc., women's tasks were progressively reduced to basic housekeeping and early childcare. Instead of enjoying a sense of economic indispensability, women were reduced to dependence, living off the wages of their husbands instead of working in a common economic enterprise with their husbands. Women were shut off in a world of private retirement instead of working with the adults throughout the day, servants and apprentices, etc., even extended family. Women became socially isolated with young children all day. And that's where we're at today, isn't it? For a lot of Christian families. The man goes off to work to do his best to provide and make enough revenue so that mom can stay home with the kids. And because being with the kids, especially in our current culture, demands constant vigilance, she struggles to do other things that engage other parts of her brain. We could hear this and go, well, then we've got the whole thing wrong. And that might well be. And that might mean figuring out some things as a family. I don't believe that somebody with a microphone should tell you how to do that. But every family should at least consider it, that there is a dynamic that used to exist in the family that does not today. And it has impacted all of us. But just continue, consider the march of history. So the Industrial Revolution, men go off, but it didn't. The Industrial Revolution didn't just, it was a ripple effect. That actually was more like a tsunami. It just suddenly, the tidal wave hit with a little something called feminism, where suddenly, because men were going off to work, women were staying at home, women were attending church more because they were more emotive services, pastors, authors started writing about child rearing, preaching about raising kids at women. Why? Because dad wasn't as involved in that. But then, because women were at home doing things that didn't feel fulfilling, that gave rise to the feminist movement. And then women went to work. Now the impact is on children who not only not have a dad at home to raise them while they're working, but they don't have a mom at home either. Whoa. Do we wonder why our society is crumbling? The devil hates family, hates it. And what happens in our culture? I do believe that Tucker Carlson, when he was writing about his neoconservatism, or his paleoconservatism is what he called it, old classic conservatism, that we don't accept every new trend and go, yeah, that's good, it'll make it faster, go! Wait a second, what are the implications? What's the ripple effect here? Because what we are seeing from history, if we learn no other lesson, is that these ideas have consequences and they flood all over the place. Women, because of the Industrial Revolution, experienced a drastic decrease in the range of work available to them in the home, while experiencing a dramatic increase for the narrow range of tasks that remained. Historical records give evidence to this change. Women, quote, vanished more or less entirely from a number of occupations. They appeared less frequently in public records as printers, blacksmiths, arms makers, or proprietors of small business concerns. Why? Because they were at home. Why? Because the men were off working. Why? Because of the Industrial Revolution. Even the portrayals of masculine and feminine character came in for social redefinition. You think there's a battle today to define genders? It's been going on. In the older ideal of communal manhood, the key word was duty. Duty to one's superiors and to God. Manly virtue was defined as keeping one's passions in submission to reason, and passion defined, by the way, as self-interest or personal ambition. The good man was the one who exercised self-restraint and self-sacrifice for the sake of the common good. Now, dad goes off to work to be fulfilled, mom leaves the home to feel like she's actually doing something important, and the family is weakened, and children feel it. But the emerging world of industrial capitalism fostered a new definition of virtue. The capitalist world seemed to require each man to function as an individual in competition with other individuals. In this context, it was appropriate to act under the impulse of self-interest and personal ambition. Now, if you and I are bad Christian historians, guess what we're going to do? we're going to become socialists or something even dingier. No, capitalism is still the best system that we've concocted for the flourishing of most or more people than any other system that flawed human beings can create. So we don't want to run away from capitalism, but we need to understand its impact and what it does to us. And that maybe, just maybe, sir, some of the pressure that you feel is not some of the obvious stuff that you are having to be an individual who perhaps is called to compromise, who's called to not bring his Christian faith into the workplace and to do whatever is necessary to keep the family afloat while being absent from them 40, 50, 60 hours a week. Do we throw out everything we have today? Certainly not. But do we remember history so that our Bibles can help us understand how we are to live today? Absolutely. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. Well, do you like a free society predicated upon Judeo-Christian ethics of justice, rights, and forgiveness? Well, if so, then you're infected with a parasitic condition, and there's no permanent cure to help you. That's according to a recent published article that describes being white as a malignant, parasitic-like condition. It was written by Donald Moss, who is an author and activist, and he explains that whiteness establishes an entitled dominion that enables the host of parasitic whiteness to have power without limit, force without restriction, violence without mercy, and he adds that it has a drive to hate and terrorize. Moss claims whiteness easily infiltrates even groups founded on the protection of individuals. So he's saying the scary thing about whiteness is that you don't even have to be white to have it. He's also saying that the appetites of these parasitic hosts are nearly impossible to eliminate. Basically, Moss is saying there's no real way to remove the sin of whiteness. All you can do for the infected is to redirect their sinful appetites and try to frustrate them, so there only remains path to damnation. Not for salvation, but damnation. Sounds like history is starting to repeat itself, wasn't it? The German people who considered the Jews as parasites too? Well, in case you haven't, went completely nuts this month over the propaganda being shoved down our children's throats. You know, it's Pride Month. Here's more from the drag queen at Nickelodeon.
Every color on the pride flag is a symbol in the sky. Pride. And I'm proud to be me every time that I see that pride flag waving high.
Earlier this year, Pastor James Coates of Grace Life Church in Alberta spent more than a month in jail for holding worship services in violation of COVID restrictions. Coates' congregation had also met in an undisclosed location after police and public health officials barricaded their church building back in April. Coates recently submitted a charter challenge alleging that Alberta's public health orders were a violation of religious freedom after receiving a ticket on December 20th. In a response, a judge disagreed with Coates and dismissed the application. The judge argued that Coates' 35-day stint in jail did not violate the pastor's religious freedom because he could have been released from custody back in February, but Coates refused to sign a bail order which would have prevented him from leading services again. Coates' trial is slated to continue on June 30th. Well, facing a potential ban on sidewalk counseling near an abortion clinic, a pro-life group in Ohio got creative. Foundation for Life, a pro-life organization based in Toledo, bought the parking lot across the street from an abortion clinic in March. The pro-life group bought the lot as the Toledo City Council was considering a new ordinance that would prohibit pro-life volunteers from counseling women within 100 feet of the clinic without their consent. An estimated 1,000 women will visit the clinic to consider an abortion in 2021, according to Foundation for Life. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called our sanctuary. Through Christ, we find refuge from God's justice and find a safe haven where we can enter into the presence of the Holy God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Aha! And ha, this is Wretched Radio. Ain't Dagwood Bumstead a knee slapper? You say, I don't know what a Dagwood Bumstead is. Is that a sandwich? No. It was a cartoon character created in the 1930s, which did not come out of the blue like a lightning bolt. It was the culmination of American history where the father was suddenly no longer involved much or at all with the raising of children, but they were sent out into the big bad world to be the breadwinners while mom stayed home and raised the kids. And because dad was out in the dog-eat-dog world, he became rather uncivilized. He needed the training of women to help him be a little bit more tolerable. And they increasingly were seen as detached from the family unit, dithering, downright dumb. Have you seen the movie about the mom who has to go to a trip, a wedding? She's got to leave the house. And the only person who can watch the kids are dithering dad, who can't possibly be left in charge of the home and children. Laundry? Are you kidding? Forget about ironing. He doesn't even know how to load the dishwasher. And as far as changing a diaper goes, oh, let the hilarity ensue as the contemporary Ed Bundy, Dagwood Bumstead, dithering dad tries to change a baby's diaper. Where did that come from? It came from the Industrial Revolution. Nancy Piercy, in a book called Total Truth, which I found overall engrossing, talks about our society and how we got here. The Industrial Revolution caused men to leave the home and go out and compete. Eventually, the values of the colonial period were actually turned upside down. The Puritans had viewed the passions, the desire for self-fulfillment, as a threat to social order, requiring control and self-restraint for the public good. Not individualism, public good. But by the end of the 19th century, male passions and self-interest had come to be viewed in a positive light as the source of economic prosperity. Greed is good. Compete. Get what's yours. For women, however, the doctrine of separate spheres meant an entirely different story. Women were to cultivate the softer virtues, community, morality, religion, self-sacrifice, and affection. They were urged to act as the moral guardians of the home. That is a shocking reversal of all of history. In colonial days, husbands and fathers, they function as the moral spiritual leaders of the household. But men now, because of the Industrial Revolution, were told, you're naturally crude and brutish, and you need to learn virtues from your wife. Do we see how roles have been rewritten for us? America was releasing men from the requirements to be virtuous. For the first time, moral and spiritual leadership were no longer viewed as masculine attributes. They became women's work. Now, is this to suggest women shouldn't be involved in that work? No, it's not. It's just that it was predominantly the role of the male to do that leading. And this affected the church, which, of course, is our concern. Where was the Christian church in all of this? Did it stand firmly against the demoralization of the male character? No. Instead, the American church largely acquiesced in the redefinition of masculinity. After centuries of teaching that husbands and fathers were divinely called to the office of household headship, the church began to pitch its appeal primarily to women. Churchmen began to speak of women as having a special gift for religion and morality. And if you look, and if you just look at the books of the day, you will see that borne out. Why do so many young men not want to get married? Is it possible? It is because young men are not hearing that they are called to leadership in the home, because you can't even talk like that these days. There are people who might just be hearing my voice for some random accident in the universe or divine providence that are going, wow, whoa, whoa, male's leader, hold on a second. That's just considered antiquated thinking on the wrong side of history, don't you know? And I wonder if young men aren't hearing that message. Why get married? That it's not a mountain to climb, a mountain of self-sacrifice, a mountain of being involved in the raising of children. No, I just have to go off to work, get a bunch of money, and if things don't work out at home, she's going to take at least half of my stuff. Is it any wonder that men maybe are a little bit leery about marriage? That there's nothing for them to do in that role? Even the tone of religion became feminized. The ministry lost a toughness, a sternness, an intellectual rigor which our society then and since has been accustomed to identifying with masculinity, and instead took on feminine traits of care, nurturing, sentimentalism, and retreat from the harsh, competitive ethos of the public arena. The trend was especially typical of liberal churches. That's why today you show me a church that is emotional, and I'll tell you it's liberal. You show me a church that's anti-intellectual, and I can tell you it's liberal. Why? Because that's what liberals do. Now, let's be mindful that on the other side of the aisle and in the opposite ditch, we can turn Christianity into nothing but a knowledge that puffs up. We don't want to go there, but we don't want to be a religion that leads through emotions. It's fascinating. I was reading through Colossians chapter 2 last night in my 816 hours of private quiet time. Jimmy, how many do you do every day?
Not quite that many. I stop at 750.
I guess I'm better. And I couldn't help but notice that the transformation into Christ's likeness, it is a cognitive process that involves the brain. When you read through your Bible, try as best you can to not just skim like a stone on top of the water, because you can miss some really helpful stuff. This is Paul. I want you to know how much I've agonized for you and for the church, and for the many friends who have never known me personally. My goal is that they will be encouraged and knit together by strong ties of love. I want them to have full confidence because they have complete understanding of God's secret plan, which is Christ Himself. In Him lie all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. This is not to relegate feelings into a storage unit down the street. But the Christian religion is cognitive. It's a thinking religion. It is not one where we put our brains on the shelf. This is why music is so dumb these days. It's just designed for emotions, to get you into a mood or a feeling. In Him are all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. I'm telling you this so that you won't deceive yourselves with persuasive arguments. There's a battle for the brain. I'm still with you. I'm very happy because you are living as you should because of your strong faith in Christ. And it continues. You must continue to live in obedience to Him. By the way, you want to grow in sanctification, start being obedient. You say that is sanctification. I say, yep. You want to become more sanctified? Stop sinning. You want to become more holy? Do not give in to your lusts and your desires. Stop it, and you're going to become more holy. That's how it works. Let your roots grow down deep for nourishment, so you will grow in faith, strong and vigorous in the truth you were taught. It's all throughout the Bible, all throughout the New Testament. Look for all of the language about truth, knowledge, wisdom, understanding, and then look at the admonitions against philosophy, worldly ideologies. Read 1 Corinthians 1, 2, and 3 to see that vividly revealed. We're a thinking religion. Nancy Piercy. Whereas traditional church teaching held that fathers were responsible for their children's education in the early 1800s, one historian said New England ministers fervently reiterated their consensus that mothers were more important than fathers, informing the tastes, sentiments, and habits of children, and more effective in instructing them. As a result, mothers increasingly took over the formerly paternal task of conducting family prayers. That's fascinating. The church became a woman's world. It was largely women who fueled the widespread reform movements of the progressive era in the 19th century. Who was really working hard on the abolition of slavery? How's about the abolition of alcohol? It was women who led the charge. They became the moral crusaders of their time. The Progressive Era marked the birth of secular feminist movement as well. But most of these early crusaders were definitely not feminists per se like we think of today. They didn't base their claim to work outside of the home and on the feminist argument there are no important differences between men and women. No, they accepted the doctrine that women are more loving, more sensitive, and pious. But then they argued because of those qualities, we're the ones better equipped for the benevolent work beyond the confines of the home. We're the ones who can fix society. And so it is. We see the beginning of the feminist movement, which is yet another ripple in the tidal wave known as the Industrial Revolution, which has rather substantial impact on your family. This is Wretched Radio. Surprise! I continue to be surprised by MediShare, even though I researched it like nobody's business before Mrs. Friel and I committed to affordable biblical health sharing as opposed to our traditional insurance plan. I researched, but I did not know all of the things that I'm discovering about MediShare. For instance, people are way more satisfied after making the switch. The customer satisfaction rate is double that of typical health insurance plans. Double. Is MediShare right for everyone? No, nothing really is. But it might be right for your family, and you might be very, very happy with it, especially when you're saving on average $500 per month per family. Interested? Learn more at MediShare.com/wretched or receive a quote within 2 minutes by calling 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE.
All right, so what are some of the best combinations you can think of? Rice and beans? Bacon and eggs? How about you and Wretched? Yep, that's right. When you become a Wretched Gospel partner, you and Wretched become one of the best combinations in the world. Combining our efforts allows us to reach more people all over the world with the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. It's like peanut butter and jelly. Separately, they're pretty good, but combined together, they become great. And thanks to you, Wretched is among the top 5% of all podcasts across platforms like Apple, Google, Spotify, and all the others. Together, we have reached millions. As a matter of fact, check this out. Wretched has been downloaded nearly 11 million times. That is an amazing feat that we want to increase. Get all of the details on becoming a Wretched Gospel partner right now by visiting wretched.org/donate. Or you can text the word Wretched to the number 44321. You and Wretched, it's even better than salt and pepper.
Clearly, I am not the sharpest bulb in the drawer. Nevertheless, I can figure this out. In order for a woman who is experiencing a crisis pregnancy to see an ultrasound, who 80% of the time chooses life, you've got to have an ultrasound machine. Perhaps you have the means to provide an entire ultrasound machine for a preborn center. If you do, please know the people who use these machines every day, they know their power and they are so grateful.
This is our sonogram room, but we call it the miracle room. But for many years, we didn't have much support for this miracle room. Thank you for the new machine that is on its way.
Thank you indeed. And if you could provide an ultrasound machine or an ultrasound for just $28, please consider doing so. Preborn.org/wretched.
Attributes of God. Psalm 115, verse 3 says that God does all that he pleases. God is sovereign over his whole creation. He has the right and the power to govern all things according to his will. Nothing occurs in your life that God, in his sovereignty, has not allowed. He is working all things for his glory and the good of those who love him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
How did dads become so dithering? Answer: history. This is Wretched Radio. Nancy Piercy, a book called Total Truth. This is the effect of the Industrial Revolution. When men went off to work, leaving mom to stay at home, she became the moralizer. Dad became the crude breadwinner. And for the first time, it became socially acceptable for fathers not to be involved with their families. By the 1920s and 30s, in urban areas, The father became a secondary parent who did the extras, hobbies, sports, trips to the zoo. One historian said fathers were reduced to entertainers, romper room dads. There emerged the now familiar image of fathers as incompetent bumblers in the home who are patronized by long-suffering wives and clever children. When did the portrayal of dad as a doofus begin? About the 1930s. Why? Because that's how culture was starting to view men. Why? Because of the Industrial Revolution and because churches were not figuring this out well. And I have to confess to you, this goes for those of us who are complementarians too. I just wonder how much of this that we've forgotten, that the dynamic of what happens in a home with mom and dad working, staying at home, it's really we try to fit our Bible into a 21st century context. That ain't easy. And sometimes we need to be willing to say, you know what, we're not going to let the culture define us. We're not going to let them tell us how to do this. Do I suggest moving to some island someplace where we all just hang out together and dads stay at home? No. But there certainly must be some things that our pulpits should be preaching about that are contrary to the current cultural whims of having families rise up the cultural ladder of prosperity, finance, esteem. There's got to be something. What might it be? Is there anything that a pastor could potentially be preaching about, knowing that our society has reshaped families to go outside of the way they were understood biblically to operate? Anything? I wonder if you don't drive by a lot of these places every day, that the church has nothing to criticize, nothing to say about the contemporary institution known as daycare centers. It was a tragic loss for the family when dad had to, and he really did have to. Dad's got to do what a dad's got to do. He had to leave the home. He had to go out to work. But because women then found themselves feeling very unfulfilled, they started to fight for what? Going to work. Being involved. Going off to war. Because staying at home with the kids just wasn't cutting it for them. And they demanded more and more access to the workplace. And because of that, they still desired to have children. They thought, and they've been told by too many preachers, you can have both. You can have kids and a career. Was that ever conceivable? And I think rightly understood, the answer is yeah, prior to the Industrial Revolution, when dad was home too. It was entirely manageable, and it worked. But now, moms go off to work too, in response to the Industrial Revolution and the disappearance of dads. And what are we to do with the children? We put them not just in a daycare center, sit down for this one, but in the church daycare center. Do I understand why churches do that? Yeah, I do, actually. And I don't mean that in a sarcastic kind of way. I do. I get it. Because that's what our culture has become, and you either get in the game or you don't. But might I suggest we don't have to? And that we should be the ones going, wrong. No, not acceptable. This is just not the way the kids were meant to be treated. Can't be doing these things. You're going to have to figure out the dynamic at home to figure out a way to make it work. Or, in the words of the great theologian Laura Schlesinger, remember her? And do you remember the thrashing that she received for telling moms you can have a career, you can have kids, but you can't have both? Do you remember that? Have you ever heard a church preaching like that? Okay, you say I've got that wrong. Fair enough. Has your church said anything about any of these societal dynamics that are imposed upon us as Christian families? To say, you got to stand firm here. Dad, you cannot relegate your role. I know the dynamic is difficult. You got to get it figured out. It's a priority. We shouldn't just be the ones who take the kids to the zoo on the weekends to give mom a break. There's got to be a more Christian way to operate in the confines that we currently find ourselves living in. Do you ever hear a church preaching about those things? Fathers were not involved in the families as of the 1920s and the 1930s and became known as the dithering dads. This is from Total Truth, Nancy Piercy. As fatherhood lost status, not surprisingly, men showed a decreasing interest in being fathers. From 1960 to 1980, there was a striking 43% reduction in the amount of time men spent in a family environment where young children are present. From the beginning, feminism was marked by a considerable anger and envy, not toward individual men so much as toward the fact of the opportunities available to men in the public sphere. We want it too. Feminists said, hey, the problem began when work was removed from the home. The solution then was obvious. Women should follow their work into the public arena. That's what men had done. Why not us? Well, an answer would be the little ones that have your last name running around your ankles. The historical record in America shows that this approach did not work. The truth is that men will be drawn back into family life only when they are convinced that being a good husband and father is a manly thing to do, that parental duty and sacrifice are masculine virtues, that marital love and fidelity are not female standards imposed upon men externally, but an integral and internal part of the male character, something inherent and original created by God. Might it be that if we, instead of lowering the bars for papas, we raised it and challenged them and in some instances said, dude, put down your game. You don't need a toy room and you don't need a man cave. You need to be a dad. You need to be a man who has your passions under control, who doesn't come home saying, I deserve a break today and I'm going to take it. While mom takes care of the kids, dad needs to be stepping up and involved. The 1960s. Feminists urged women to leave the empty husk of the home and to stake out a claim on the public arena where real work was done, where they could regain some respect. One problem, the kids. Hence, contraception and abortion. Well, well, well. Do actions, ideologies, worldviews, systems have consequences? Yeah. Why the desire, the demand for the right to exterminate your own child? Where did this come from? I would suggest it came from the Industrial Revolution that changed the dynamic of a home and that caused women to feel unfulfilled and were lied to and told the only satisfaction that you're going to find is out in a field of labor. So go and get it. And don't let your kids die, so relegate them to the care of others. Despite, by the way, I'm sorry, despite the scientific evidence of the consequences of daycare on children. It's undeniable. So that was our little tour through history. What are you going to do with it? Let's remember, we aren't going to do with it what far too many bad Christian historians do. We're not going to ricochet and whiplash. I do believe that we need to live in the confines, the constructs that we were born into. But we cannot give in to society so much that it causes damage to the marital relationship, which is a picture of the gospel, and the upbringing of children. And so I would be the last one to tell you what to do. Seriously, how dare I? But might I challenge all of us, and this, by the way, goes for grandparents too, who I think should also be involved in the raising of their kids. Kids, do we need to make some adjustments? Do we perhaps need some new priorities? Do we perhaps need to be making sacrifices? Do we need to rethink our roles? Do our pulpits need to address these subjects? and wrangle through these difficult issues. Because God had it figured out when he had the family unit just connected to one another in labor and in home life and in spiritual life. We have a disconnect today. And it is up to each Christian church and each individual Christian family to be as biblical as we possibly can be in a world that is absolutely broken what is best. And until tomorrow, go serve your King.